You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Dark Forest. You know, there is just something spooky about the woods. No matter where you are on this earth, you truly are never alone. Make sure to subscribe if you're new to the channel, click that thumbs up and spread me like butter. A shout out to my channel members and my patrons. I love you all. Now, let's get spooky. I walked up the trail behind Martha and Edward. My nose began to run, a common issue I faced. Any activity outside would end in a runny nose, but thankfully I came prepared. I grabbed a tissue from my pocket and blew my nose into it. I stuffed the tissue back into my pocket and kept walking with the group. The group consisted of 5 people, including myself. Martha was a tall woman with brown medium-length hair and circular glasses. She was dressed like an expert hiker, but in reality, her boyfriend Edward was the expert. Edward loved hiking and made sure to have Martha pack everything she would need, even if she didn't think it was necessary. Edward was lengthy and had short black hair. His face was void of facial hair, mostly because when he did grow it, it would come out in black patches instead of a full beard. Travis was a well-built and athletic man. He played football back in high school and hit the gym like it was his punching bag. He wore cargo pants, a long-sleeved shirt, and his Leatherman jacket as well. He had dark skin and dark black hair. His green eyes matched the forest around us. Tara was the final member outside of me to join our little hiking group. She had short black hair and wore contacts. She wasn't very experienced at hiking, but had Edward to lean on when necessary. We had planned on hiking up the mountain which Edward had picked out a few months ago. Andrew and Emily were going to come. But unfortunately, life got in the way of things, and they couldn't make it. We were pretty lucky to find some days that worked for all of us because of school ending and adult life truly starting. High school had just finished up 2 weeks ago, and realistically, we all knew that we would fizzle out and stop talking to each other. No one said this out loud. Instead, we just stuck a band-aid on this sore thumb and let future us deal with it. "Hold up, guys. I gotta pick up the phone really quick," Travis said before stopping near a tree. He placed his bag on the ground and removed a small shovel from it. Tara looked confused at him. "What are you talking about?" she asked him as he walked off into the tree line. "Nature's calling and I can't let this go to voicemail," he said while laughing at his own joke. We all laughed. Tara snorted a bit and covered her nose and mouth with one hand. "The sun is starting to set. There should be a camp just up ahead on the mountain. Trevor, you got the tents with you, right?" Edward asked me. "Of course," I replied to him. "Sounds good, just making sure," he said. We waited for Travis to finish up with his phone call and head back to the group. We kept hiking up the mountain. The farther that we went up the mountain, the lower the sun got. I slowed my pace and tried to fall back towards Travis. I lowered my voice so that only the two of us could hear. "So, Travis, I wanted to ask you about that sleeping situation. Edward and Martha, of course, are going to sleep in their own tent. That leaves us and two other tents and three people," I said to him. He smacked his lips and raised his head and cracked a smile. "This whole trip is about enjoying nature and you're out here being horny, my guy," he said to me. "No, it's not like that. It's just that this could be a good time for me and her to bond more," I said to him. His smile widened more. "Look me dead in the eyes and tell me that you didn't bring a condom up here," he said while maintaining eye contact with me. I kept eye contact for a few seconds but looked away. He knew immediately. He chuckled and faced forward on the trail ahead of us. "How long have you liked her?" he asked. "Since nearly the end of junior year," I answered. He turned his head and made a surprised face. "That long and you still haven't tried to ask her out or anything?" he asked. "You've seen shit happen like this before. Two people become friends and one of them catches feelings and the other doesn't. They try to stay friends, but it's never the same after that," I say to him. He raised up one eyebrow and scratched his face. "Yeah, Oliver and Tyrese. So now why is this the time to let her know?" he asked. "I mean, if she doesn't feel the same way, we fizzle out as friends and then I won't feel so bad. Eventually, we're going to all fizzle out and disconnect as a group," I said. "Man, cut that crap out. That's so depressing. Of course we're all going to stay friends," he said. His brow furrowed as he spoke. "All right, you could sleep in the tent with her. I'll come up with something," he said. I nodded my head and turned to face the path ahead. The sun was nearly setting, and we were getting closer to the campsite. Some time passed before we reached the campsite. It consisted of three platforms for the tents and not much else. We took all our packs off and started setting up. We got all the tents up without much issue. The sun had set by then, but its remaining glow illuminated the forest. We placed some chairs outside of our tents and began talking with each other until the night had fully approached. "Tara, you brought the whiskey, right?" Edward asked while sipping from his water. "Wait, was I supposed to bring the whiskey?" she asked. "Of course, it's our repellent in case of razor shins," he said with wide eyes. Her face drained of emotion. "Oh, you're just being a butt. You know I wouldn't worry about forgetting crap all the time," she said to him. "I'm not joking, Tara. Razor shins is an apex predator around these parts. Do you want to keep your scalp because you're doing a bad job at it?" Edward said in a dead serious manner. "Are you threatening to scalp Tara or what? I'm completely lost," Travis said. Razor shins was an old legend in New England about a Native American chief that had razor-sharp shins, which he would use to scalp people with if they didn't bring him Bangor whiskey every night, Martha chimed in. Yeah, that definitely makes more sense," Travis said. "Maybe your uncle has some in his cabin," I said to Edward. "If he does have some, it's locked up tight in the liquor cabinet. It's been a while since I've been up there to the cabin," Edward said before sitting back in his chair. "We'll probably get there around 2 or 3-ish tomorrow," Martha said before letting loose a yawn. She bid us goodnight and went into her tent. Edward soon followed. Travis, Tara, and I sat around watching the stars. I looked down from the sky and saw something in the distance. It was a quick glint of light. I craned my neck and looked even closer. I saw a hunched shape next to the tree where the glint was coming from. I sat up more and blinked a few times. My eyes adjusted. I saw that it was the shape of just a dead tree. I leaned back in my seat and let out a sign. "All right, campers. I'm going to go to sleep now. It's been fun," Travis said before standing up and walking over to his tent. He climbed inside and zipped it up. "I'm getting tired too. I'm going in," Tara said. She stood up and stretched before walking over to the tent. "I'm coming," I said. I stood up and followed her into the tent. I zipped the tent up and climbed into my red sleeping bag. Tara removed her long-sleeved shirt, which showed her gray t-shirt she had under it. Her right arm had a new tattoo on it. It was a dream catcher. "Is that new?" I asked. "Oh yeah, I got it last week. Went down to Massachusetts to get it," she said. "It looks good. I always wanted to get a tattoo, but I don't know what I would get. I know you could get it removed with lasers, but that's just too costly for me, I blabbered on. Get a tattoo of the sun. It's like the one constant in life, and of course it's badass, she said. The sun is badass? I asked her. Yeah, of course. It's one of the ultimate tools of life, destruction, energy, and one of those few constants in life, she said while keeping eye contact with me. I looked into her eyes. They were hazel brown. I'll consider it, I said. She broke eye contact and slipped into her sleeping bag. Tara, I never really got to thank you for helping me after the dance. I'm really glad that you were there, I said. She looked over at me and made eye contact again. Of course. I've been in a similar situation and I know how much it sucks, she said. She outstretched one hand and held mine. Good night. I don't want to be sleepy on the way up, she said. She retracted her hand and turned to face the other way. We both closed our eyes and went to sleep. My eyes opened to the blackness of the tent. I could hear footsteps coming from outside of the tent. I looked around and saw the shadow of a person outside. The shadow had something strapped to its back. It must have been Travis getting a call from nature again. I closed my eyes and tried to go to sleep again. The next time I woke up, I could see sunlight pouring into the tent. I woke up and stepped out of my tent. I saw Travis and Edward sitting in some chairs, eating some dehydrated meals we had packed. I sat down in one of the chairs and let the sunlight wash over me. Nature's giving you booty calls at night, Trav? I said in a joking manner. He scooped food into his mouth. What are you talking about? He said in between bites. You woke me up when you went to use the bathroom, I said in a more serious manner. Travis stopped eating and looked at Edward. Travis pointed to him and Ed and shook his head. Trevor, none of us went to the bathroom last night. Did you see someone? Edward asked. I felt a chill go down my back. Yeah, I saw the shadow of someone when I was in my tent. It had a bag or something slung around its shoulders. What maniac hikes in the night like that? I asked. It's not too difficult to hike up in the day, but hiking at night like that is very dangerous, Edward said. We sat quietly eating our breakfast. Eventually, Tara and Martha stepped out of the tent and joined us outside. Travis's mood changed once he saw Tara step outside. He looked over at me and raised both of his eyebrows. I shook my head no at him. He started shaking his head as well while scarfing down what he had left on his plate. We all finished eating our food and packed up the tents before we headed further on the trail. We climbed further up the mountain. There were some rough parts over the trail, but overall it was enjoyable. The sun shined down on us, but the wind felt nice when it hit us. As we were walking, Edward stopped and motioned for the group to stop as well. The smell then hit us. Rotting flesh and blood mixed to form a putrid aroma. Off in the woods was a dead deer. Parts of its skin were missing along with its antlers. Dang, that's brutal. Are there bears up here? Martha asked. No, bears are rare to find around here. I don't know what could have done this, Edward said. We all eventually turned back to the trail and kept walking. We all had theories on what could have been done to that deer. I thought that the nighttime hiker most likely did it. We walked for another 30 minutes before we came across Edward's uncle's cabin. The cabin was well built, and quite large for a cabin in the middle of nowhere. We quickly entered and immediately fell onto the leather couch and chairs in the den. Reluctantly, I stood up and began unpacking my gear. I brought my stuff into the room which Tara and I would be sleeping in. The room was smaller and only had two beds, a single large burrow, and there was also a window which peered out into the forest above the bureau. I looked out the window and took in the view. I had lived in Maine for many years but never really gotten into wilderness exploration. Edward was the one that really got me into it. My trance was broken when I saw a set of antlers in the far distance. A grouping of trees obscured most of the animal's body. I studied the animal as it walked through the forest. Deer seems to be very common around here, I thought to myself. The grouping of trees thinned and I could make out its body. It was completely black and looked like it had what I would want to say were feathers. The animal stopped. It panned its head around in the opposite direction of me. The animal then sped off like a frightened deer. A loud knock hit the door behind me. I jumped and turned. "Can I come in, or are you changing?" Tara asked from the other side of the door. I took a deep breath and opened the door for her. She walked in and began putting her supplies away. I sat on the bed and took a few breaths. "You look kind of pale, Trevor. How much water have you drank? Don't want you to get some heat stroke. There's some downstairs," Tara said to me. I nodded and stood up. "Yeah, I'll go get some water," I said. I stepped out of the room and walked over to the main lounge room. Edward and Martha were in the room when I entered. Martha was holding a rifle with a scope on it. I walked past them and grabbed a water. I began the drink, probably faster than I should have. "Hey, Trevor, ever shoot a gun before?" Edward asked me. "Nothing like that. Only handguns. My brother took me to a range a few times," I said in between gulps of water. "Rifles like this are actually easier to shoot, in my opinion anyways. More area for the recoil to disperse into your shoulder than straight into your hands," Martha said. "Is that loaded?" I asked. "It's bolt action and empty," Martha said. She turned the rifle and placed it back on the rack on the wall above the fireplace. I finished my water and put the empty bottle down. The sound of a vehicle roared in the forest. Edward quickly leaned over to the front door and looked outside. "Looks like we have company," he said. It came out more like a question than a statement. I moved over to him, and I could see a man in a green army field jacket, cargo pants, and black cargo boots riding over to the cabin on an ATV. By the time he stepped off the ATV, all of us had gathered around the front door. "I'm going to talk with him," Edward said. He opened the door and walked out to greet the man. Martha pushed the door halfway open once Ed left. That way we could overhear the conversation. "Anything I could help you with, sir?" Edward asked. The man had short blonde hair and a massive scar on his cheek. He looked in his early 30s. "I was driving around the area and saw that people were moving around in the cabin. This place is usually quiet at this time of year. Do you own this cabin?" he said. His voice was gruff. "No, my uncle does. He let me come up here with a few of my friends since we just graduated," Edward said. The man nodded his head while looking at us. "Okay. It's just that break-ins are common around here and I wasn't sure what was going on. Stay safe, these woods can be treacherous," the man said. He walked away from the cabin and back onto his ATV. He smiled and waved before driving back off into the woods. Edward walked back over to the cabin. When he entered, he locked the door behind him. "Let's hope that guy was just a concerned citizen. We got the gun in case he isn't," Edward said. "We're just being paranoid. This isn't a slasher movie. The guy just doesn't want people getting their stuff stolen. Plus, there's five of us. If we jumped him, then we could probably take him," Travis said. Some of us chuckled. I sat down in the lounge and tried to push the strange events out of my mind. The sun started to set again and the rest joined me in the lounge. We started preparing dinner of rehydrated meals and water. We sat around and ate while we talked. "Hey Travis, any luck in the you know department?" Martha said. Martha laid her hand out flat in the air, kinda like a stereotypical gay guy. "You're lucky you're funny girl, and yes actually," he said in between scoops of rice, beans, and some type of meat. "Really? Anyone from school?" she said. "Marcus Killian. He messaged me a few weeks ago, and we've been talking on and off," Travis said. "He's gay? Really?" she said. "He is so fine," Tara chimed in with a mouthful of rice. "He's bisexual, actually," Travis said. Tara pumped her fist up in the air for a second before she went back to eating. "What about you, Trevor? Any ladies take an interest in you?" Martha said. I blew air out of my mouth and scratched my head. "If women were water, then I'm a desert," I said. "Have you tried dating apps? That's how Emily and Jackson met," Edward said. "All the non-sketchy ones cost money. If I use Tinder, then I'm more likely to get kidnapped than to meet some girl," I said. "Tara, what about you?" Travis asked. "If he's the desert, then I'm a palm tree waiting for rain," she said. "You know palm trees aren't in the desert, right?" I asked her. "No, palm trees are in the desert. I've seen it before in movies," she said. "Palm trees do not all live in the desert," Travis said while laughing. "Well, you get what I was trying to say," Tara said while she sipped her water. "At least in that scenario, one of you is in the other," Edward muttered. Martha slapped his arm, and Travis nearly spit out the water he was drinking. We all laughed and finished up our food. Just like yesterday, we dispersed one by one back to our rooms. Tara and I didn't speak much, and it felt awkward being alone together. I eventually drifted off. I woke up, and I could hear loud commotion coming from downstairs. I sat up in bed and saw that Tara had left the room. I stood up and walked downstairs. My friends were crowding around the front door. Travis was holding a hiking pole in both hands like a baseball bat. Martha was holding the rifle and loading a round into it. Tara was shaking and holding a pocket knife in both hands. Edward was shouting at something outside. I walked closer and I could see a creature standing outside. It had wolf-like legs and it stood up and was bipedal. It had loose baggy skin and had thick black scales running up and down its body. A cloak of feathers was draped over its being's body. It looked like a crow or raven feathers. Four massive wings were peeking out from the thing's back. Its head was a large bloody deer skull with two sets of antlers attached to it. In the eye sockets were two bloodshot eyes that refused to blink. The thing was screaming at us. It sounded like a woman, but its mouth wasn't opening. "I'll frickin' shoot you!" Martha screamed at it. The rifle was loaded and pointed at it. The being screamed again, and then the wave of dread hit me. I felt nausea and nearly threw up on the floor. I tried breathing, but the air felt thin. I was practically suffocating until the loud boom echoed throughout the cabin. Martha fired the rifle, and it hit the creature. The screaming stopped and turned more into a whimper mixed with the sound of multiple rattlesnakes hissing. The thing blew up into the sky and disappeared from sight. "Get away from the windows! Everyone huddle up!" Martha shouted. She fiddled with the box of rifle rounds and eventually loaded the rifle again. We all huddled up and looked around the dark room. We could hear something walking on the roof of the building. We stood in a small circle for what felt like a solid hour, monitoring the sounds on the roof. The sounds eventually stopped. I tried to speak, but the words wouldn't come out. The loud sound of wood splitting apart, the leaves shifting, came from above. I couldn't comprehend what happened until the tree came down on the cabin and started a symphony of screaming and wood shattering. Travis had tackled Tara and I out of the way and onto the ground. I was lying on the cold wooden floor. I looked back up towards where we all once stood. The tree had formed a wall between Tara, Travis, me, and Martha, who stood on the other side. I looked around for Edward. His right and left arms were reaching out towards me from beneath the tree log. "Edward, where the hell are you?" Martha shouted. She was looking around the room and then made eye contact with me. I held back tears and looked down at the log. Martha dropped to her knees and let go of the rifle. She placed both hands onto the log and began sobbing. Her sobbing was quickly cut short and turned into a gargly mess of her vocal cords trying to work. The thing had come down through the large crater the tree had made and dug its two hands into Martha's neck. Its hands had bird-like talons on them. The talons were lodged deep into her throat. It flew up into the air and tried to bring Martha's body with it, but her head and neck tore from each other. Her vocal cords tore and produced a ear-piercing scream. The thing flew off with her head. Martha's body slumped to the ground. I immediately started throwing up and gagging. I eventually ran out of things to spew out, and I sat in shock on the floor. "We need to get out of here," Travis said. His voice was breaking, but he tried to stay calm. "We're in the middle of nowhere, and it's in the middle of the night. How the hell are we supposed to get back to the car like this?" I asked, my voice quivering with every word. Travis closed his eyes and took in some deep breaths. "I have a boyfriend, a mother, and a father. I need to go home, too." "Travis, think about her. Think about your mom and dad. We owe them this," he said. He fought back every emotion that his body was trying to produce, that being sadness, grief, and even anger. Travis stepped over the log and grabbed the rifle that Martha once held. "Get flashlights, water, and the bare necessities. We're going to follow the tracks from that ATV from earlier today left. His ATV will get us down quicker than hiking downhill. Understand?" he asked. I shook my head, and so did Tara. We packed the bare necessities and headed outside. Travis took the lead with the rifle. The flashlights barely lit the path, but it was better than complete darkness. We continued on the path for 30 minutes, all of my hair stood on end. Each step that I took, I could only think of that thing leaping from the trees and killing me like it had done to Martha. The tracks led us to a clearing in the woods. A large lumber mill stood amongst the trees. A gate on the sign saying "closed" on it hung openly, leading to the building. The tracks led up to the front door of the mill, and we could see the ATV sitting outside. With Travis leading the group, we entered the mill. It was dark, cold, and covered in dust. We went further into the mill and eventually came across a fire in the distant wing of the building. Multiple animal bodies were laying in the flame, being burnt black. I saw the man from earlier approaching the fire. In his right hand he had a large meat hook, which was buried deep into the neck of a deer. He dragged that deer up to the fire and threw it onto the flame. He had a gun strapped to his back. It was an AA-12, a gun popular in Call of Duty, something a civilian, let alone someone in the middle of nowhere, would not have. He had a small bag on his back as well. Three blue cylinders hung from his belt, and a silver handgun strapped to his right thigh.
"Please, sir, you gotta help us. We've just been attacked,"
Travis shouted to the man. The man immediately dropped the meat hook and grabbed a shotgun from his back. He dropped to his knee and thumbed something on the bottom of his gun. A flashing light soon assaulted all of our eyes.
"Don't move a muscle, all three of you," he said.
The man stood and thumbed the light. It changed from flashing to a steady beam. He approached us and grabbed a vial from his belt. He tossed white ash at all of us. He thumbed the flashlight again and turned it off. He placed the vial back on his belt and lowered the gun.
"You have to get us off this frickin' mountain. That thing killed my friends. I'm not dying like this," Travis said.
"Did you attack it? You specifically?" the man said in a gruff tone.
No, I didn't. Why the hell does that matter?" he asked.
"That thing is targeting white people such as myself and your friends. If you don't anger it, then it won't you," the man said.
"What are you talking about?" I asked him.
That thing was once human. Way too long ago, but now it has changed. Maine first started with the native tribes, but when the colonizers tried to take it, they fought back. That thing is still fighting after the battle's been finished," the man said.
"So what does that mean for us, then?" Tara said.
"The mountain was supposed to be vacant. It's just poor luck that you ended up here at this time. I'll try my best to help you, but my primary goal is to kill that thing. Nothing more. The name's Liam Oscar," he said.
"It was your choice to come up here and search that thing out so you could kill it?" I asked.
"No, it was the government's choice," he said. "The government sends people to hunt monsters like that."
"The government sends people to hunt monsters like that?" I asked him.
"Only the UDSs are sent out to do things like this," he said.
"UDSs? What kind of conspiracy bullcrap is this?" Travis asked.
"Unexplainable disaster survivors. It's not bullcrap, because if you survive this thing and the government finds you, then you will become like me," Liam said.
He walked back to the fire and sat down near it. "The government will offer you a position as a USD, or will kill you to make sure your secrets of what you went through stay secret," he said.
"For a government man, you seem to be spilling US secrets pretty easily," Tara said.
"I'm preparing you for your future. Those that survive the unexplainable disasters are trained to deal with these sort of unexplainable disasters," he said.
"All right then, what do you go through then, to end up with dealing with this creature?" Travis asked with anger in his voice.
2019, I was on a trip in Germany from LAX. The guy next to me snuck into a US military base and happened to contract some virus that reanimated the dead. Long story short, the pilots and I were the only ones to make it off that plane. I was the only one to accept the deal the government gave me," Liam said. I went to speak again, but Liam quickly raised up his right hand to stop me. He rose up on one knee.
You're bleeding. It was tracking you like it tracks the weak and injured, so that it leads back to the den like an animal," Liam said to Tara.
Tara's left leg was bleeding. She must have been snagged by some tree at some point when it fell. A loud female scream filled the mill. A wave of dread followed soon after that.
"Get down!"
Liam shouted.
All of us immediately fell to the ground, and Liam began firing his shotgun into the ceiling where the screaming came from. The thing that attacked us at the cabin was at the mill. The thing that Liam is supposed to kill. The creature fell down towards Liam, and each shell tore into the thing, sending pieces of it in different directions. It hit the ground and began running on all fours towards Liam. Liam grabbed one of the cylinders from his belt and threw it towards the creature. A few seconds passed before a loud flash of white blinded the creature, and a loud bang deafening it. The thing began howling out in cries, both humans and animalistic. It kept moving despite the damage done to it. It reached Liam and leapt up at him like a wolf.
"Damn it!"
Liam grunted out. He placed his arm out to take the bow. The creature's deer skull head had morphed into more wolf-like appearance. The jaws opened up and latched onto Liam's arm. He forced it to the ground and drew his sidearm. He unloaded at least half the mag into the creature. The thing didn't unlatch and kept biting harder and harder. It slammed Liam's arm with the gun down and forced him to discharge around. The bullet went astray and hit the gas canister that Liam used to start the fire. The bullet pierced the plastic container and caused a stream of flaming gas to pour out from the hole. It spread quickly and soon lit part of the mill on fire.
"Holy crap, we gotta get out of here," I said.
Travis and Tara nodded their heads and soon made a break for the exit. Part of the mill began to crumble and fall apart. We made it out through one of the exits only a few seconds before it came down. My body was sore, tired, and only being ran by adrenaline. Once we got outside, my body couldn't physically keep going and I fell to the ground. We watched as the mill was soon entirely engulfed in flames.
"This will get some people's attention," I said.
"Hopefully. Hopefully," Tara said.
We just sat there, catching our breath.
"Hey, I'm still in here! I'm almost out!"
Liam's voice called out from the mill. Travis stood up and safely approached the mill entrance.
"Follow my voice, Liam! Jesus, man! This whole place is going to come down! Get out of there!"
he shouted. A shape appeared in the flames. A large flaming wolf covered in scales, feathers, and bullet holes leapt from within the mills and latched its teeth around Travis's neck. It took him to the ground and tore out his voice box, blood spewed from his neck.
"Travis!"
I screamed out. The creature looked up from Travis's body and made eye contact with me.
"Travis,"
it said. It perfectly mimicked my voice. I sat sprawled out on the ground. I physically couldn't fight back. I couldn't do anything except look at the thing's unblinking eyes. It slowly crept towards me and saliva began to drip from its mouth. Tara ran in from the side and swung a large rebar pipe into the creature's side. It yelped like a dog and fell to the ground. She lifted the pipe up again and hit it again, again, and again. She raised the pipe up one last time and rammed it into the creature's unblinking eye. It shook violently, then finally stopped moving. Tara collapsed to the ground next to me. Tears began to stream down her face. I grabbed her hand and embraced her as I cried. I could hear the sound of keys hitting the ground next to me. I looked over and saw that a set of keys on the ground only a few feet from me. Liam, covered in soot and ash, stood standing over us. "You two take the ATV and get the hell out of here before the wildlife services get here. I'm sorry about your friends. I wish my apology meant more," Liam said. I stood up and helped Tara up from the ground. "In my report, I won't mention you two. I don't know how long that will keep you safe for. Could be forever, could just be for a month or so. Get your story out there in case they ever do get on your trail. Tell them about me and what happened here," Liam said. I nodded my head and walked off towards the ATV with Tara. We got onto it and drove back towards the cabin, back towards the path we took up the mountain. "Tara, I love you. Ever since you helped me with my panic attack at the dance, you were there to take care of me when I needed it the most. You even killed that thing before it got to me. I'm so tired and I just want you to know how I feel. I don't need an answer now, or ever. I just want you to know," I said to her. I felt her arms squeeze tighter around me.
This holiday season, reach for the one butter that never disappoints, Kerrygold. Made with milk from grass-fed cows on Irish family farms, it's rich, creamy, and perfect for baking. Whether browning butter for cookies or crafting the flakiest pie crust, Kerrygold's high butterfat content makes all the difference in flavor and texture. Holiday treats will taste extraordinary.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.